On the show today, the United Nations General Assembly is underway in New York.
Despite commitments to eradicate poverty and to reduce hunger being at the core of this agenda, alarmingly, 1.2 billion people were still living in multidimensional poverty as of 2022.
Plus, American prisoners freed from Iran.
Our fellow citizens are free after enduring something that I think it would be difficult for any of us to imagine.
And later, Congress tries to fund the government and a look at food insecurity in Malawi. Today is Tuesday, September 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden amid growing unrest in Israel. That story coming up in a moment. Now, in other diplomatic news, amid concerns their sustainable development goals are not on track, world leaders at the UN General Assembly in New York on Monday adopted a political declaration that brings hope to developing countries. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story from the UN.
On a rainy day in New York City, a somber reminder at the United Nations General Assembly of how world leaders are behind schedule in meeting the 17 Sustainable Development Goals they adopted in 2015 and hoped to achieve by 2030. Dennis Francis, President of the United Nations General Assembly.
Despite commitments to eradicate poverty and to reduce hunger being at the core of this agenda, alarmingly, 1.2 billion people were still living in multidimensional poverty as of 2022. It is estimated that approximately 8% of global population, or 680 million people, will still be facing hunger in 2030.
Young leaders also raised concerns about the lack of progress toward the Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, demanding action to combat climate change and concrete solutions to empower their generation. This is how Mayeda Adel, a young leader for the SDGs, put it.
68 million young people are looking for jobs. All over the world, millions of young people are unable to access social protection coverage. Mental health problems like depression and anxiety are a serious concern for young people.
World leaders did manage to adopt on Monday a political declaration that brings a ray of hope to struggling economies, said United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
This includes clear support for an SDG stimulus of at least $500 billion a year, as well as an effective debt relief mechanism that supports payment suspensions, longer lending terms, and lower rates.
Guterres said countries can help get the SDGs back on track by paying attention to six targeted areas, including relieving hunger, ensuring gender equality, and improving education.
Our proposed Global Digital Compact will also help countries build safe digital systems that provide internet access for all, including students in hard-to-reach communities.
Guterres highlighted another initiative that aims to create 400 million new jobs, especially in the green, care, and digital sectors. He also emphasized that countries must act now to rescue the SDGs. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, the United Nations.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in the U.S. on Monday for a meeting with President Biden amid unprecedented demonstrations in Israel against a planned overhaul of Israel's judicial system. Also on the agenda is a possible U.S. brokered deal for normalization between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
Thousands of protesters flocked to the airport Sunday night as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu left for almost a week in the U.S. Protester Anat Rifaeli.
I'm here along with thousands of other people who are all very worried about the democracy of our country and the way our government, the place our government is taking, the actions our government is taking, which are risking everything that's been built here in the past 70 years.
The demonstrators, who have been protesting in Israel for 37 consecutive weeks, vowed to follow Netanyahu everywhere he went in the U.S., starting with a meeting with business magnate Elon Musk. Netanyahu further angered the protesters when he accused them of, in his words, joining forces with the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, and Iran in their activities, an accusation that the protesters are undermining Israel's security and showing that Israel is weak and divided. In a later statement, the Prime Minister's office noted the anti-overhaul protesters would be demonstrating at the same time as pro-PLO activists who want President Biden to pressure Netanyahu to stop expanding settlements in the West Bank and take moves toward establishing a Palestinian state. As he left for the U.S., Netanyahu said he would meet many world leaders, but first and foremost, President Biden, on the sidelines of the U.N. General Assembly in New York.
The Prime Minister said it was heartwarming to see how many requests for meetings with world leaders he had received, and he said he would try to meet as many of them as he could. The most important one, he said, is with President Biden, and it's a meeting Netanyahu has been waiting for since his current government took office in late December.
Just a week later, his Justice Minister, Yariv Levin, introduced the plan for the judicial overhaul, a series of changes that would take power away from the Supreme Court and give more power to the Israeli parliament. One of the laws, called the Reasonableness Clause, which takes away one of the Supreme Court's tools to overrule government decisions, has already passed. Supporters say it redresses a situation that had given Israel's Supreme Court too much power. Opponents say it threatens Israeli democracy. Aside from the judicial overhaul, Israeli analysts say the U.S. president will use his meeting with Netanyahu to gauge how far Israel is willing to go for a normalization deal with Saudi Arabia. According to Israeli media reports, citing unidentified American and Israeli sources, under an agreement, Saudi Arabia would get a defense deal with the U.S., including permission for a civilian nuclear program. Israel would have normalized relations with the Arab countries it sees as one of the most important in the Middle East and a gateway to peace agreements with other Arab states. The Palestinians would also get significant concessions from Israel. It is this last part that President Biden wants to discuss with Netanyahu, amid statements by Netanyahu's cabinet ministers that Israel is not prepared to make deep concessions to the Palestinians. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The U.S. and Iran strike a deal. That story up next. But first, can the U.S. House of Representatives strike a deal? Congressional Republicans are advancing a continuing resolution. It's a bill that would avert a government shutdown and give Congress more time to pass a permanent budget. But will it work? I speak with Catherine Gibson, VOA's congressional correspondent.
So a continuing resolution is basically a short-term option, buying U.S. lawmakers a little bit more time to figure out some of the bigger spending issues that they can't quite agree on. Now, some of our listeners around the world may know that this has happened quite a bit in the United States in the years of late. It's very rare for Democrats and Republicans to see eye to eye on spending levels. And lately, the conservative House Freedom Caucus has really been pushing for cuts in spending levels, saying that the government is simply just spending too much money on too many different programs, and they aren't going to authorize new funding for the next year until some of those cuts are agreed to. Of course, that's a non-starter for the Democrats, who control the upper house in the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Senate. And that's how we got to this point.
So over the weekend, Speaker McCarthy and the Republicans came up with an actual bill. Can you tell us about that bill? What does it include? What does it not include?
Right. So it will include some increased funding for immigration priorities, which is very important for House Republicans. They're really concerned about President Biden's policies at the U.S.-Mexico border in particular. And just today, the Heritage Foundation, which is a very important policy think tank research facility, came out in favor of this short-term CR, saying, look, it doesn't do everything in terms of the spending cuts, but it does fund some immigration priorities. It does give some of the spending cuts. It's an acceptable compromise for now that buys lawmakers time to figure the bigger issues out. So some positive signs on Capitol Hill this week, but really anything can happen because the Conservative Freedom Caucus is very adamant that their demands be agreed to.
So if this were to get passed by the House of Representatives, next it would go to the Senate. What are its chances there? The Senate's run by Democrats.
That's right. So that's where things get a little bit sticky again, because Democrats, of course, don't want to see those cuts in spending levels. They're also arguing for a supplemental funding bill that has that all-important additional U.S. aid to Ukraine.
Now, that's if it can make it out of the House to the Senate. What are its chances of getting passed by the House of Representatives?
That's really anybody's guess right now, and I think it's an answer that Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy would very much like to have the answer to. He's been busy counting his votes, and as of late last night, was telling some reporters up here on Capitol Hill that he wasn't even sure he had the vote. So it's very hard to predict what's going to happen in the House this week and how all of this is going to play out.
Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent. Catherine, thanks for your reporting. Thanks for your time on this issue. I'm sure I'll be speaking to you again later this week.
Without a doubt. Thanks so much.
Five Americans freed in a prisoner swap with Iran will soon head home. The AP's Sagar Meghani reports.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken says it's a very good feeling.
Our fellow citizens are free after enduring something that I think it would be difficult for any of us to imagine.
Blinken spoke after the five prisoners and two family members arrived in Doha as part of a deal that freed five Iranians held in the U.S. and that unfroze nearly $6 billion in Iranian assets, despite the peaceful exchange.
It doesn't speak to anything else in the relationship?
Washington and Tehran remain locked in various disputes, and tensions are almost certain to stay high, with Iran's nuclear program enriching uranium closer than ever to weapons-grade levels, and the U.S. mounting a major military buildup in the Persian Gulf. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. China's top diplomat, Foreign Minister Wang Yi, hailed his country's strategic cooperation with Russia. This as he opened talks on Monday in Moscow with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. Wang noted Chinese and Russian commitment to a multipolar world and a more just world order. These are terms Beijing and Moscow use to counter the perceived domination of world affairs by the United States. UN agencies warned on Monday that Libya's flood-stricken city of Derna, where thousands were killed a week ago, faces the threat of disease outbreaks that could bring a second devastating crisis. The massive flash flood killed over 11,000 people and left thousands more missing. China has flown over 100 warplanes towards Taiwan between 6 a.m. Sunday and 6 a.m. Monday, a recent high, according to Taiwan's defense ministry. Taiwan said at least 40 of those planes crossed the median line of the Taiwan Strait, which has served as an unofficial barrier between the two sides. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's OSIRIS-REx sample return capsule is expected to touch down on September 24th at the Department of Defense's Utah Test and Training Range. The spacecraft contains rock and soil samples that the OSIRIS-REx scooped up when it landed on the asteroid Bennu on October 20th, 2020. The space agency has announced that the asteroid sample will be publicly revealed, and the mission team will discuss a preliminary analysis of the sample at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston on October 11th. OSIRIS-REx was the first mission to land on an asteroid. After exploring Bennu, the spacecraft's mission was extended. Its name changed to OSIRIS-APEX and was sent to orbit and explore another asteroid called Apophis. I'm Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. We'll take a look at food insecurity in Malawi coming up. One thing that could help the situation in Malawi, though, and elsewhere, would be bringing back the Black Sea Grain Deal. And to that end, with world leaders attending the UN General Assembly this week, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is stepping up his efforts to save the deal and bring Russia back into the agreement. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
The United Nations General Assembly is the venue for Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's latest bid to save the Ukrainian grain export deal after Russia's withdrawal from it. Erdogan, who has close ties with Russia's Vladimir Putin, brokered the grain deal last year with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Özgür Ünlü Husacıklı heads the German Marshall Fund's office in Ankara.
It's a positive role that Turkey is playing, acknowledged by all actors, and also it in a way justifies Turkey's balancing act. Because if Turkey had suspended political dialogue with Russia, Erdogan wouldn't be able to play this role. So in a way, it also mutes criticisms towards Turkey's balancing act.
Erdogan met with Putin earlier this month and said he would present proposals at the UN to revive the deal. The Turkish leader has voiced sympathy for Moscow's call for the easing of sanctions to allow the Russian export of grain and the lifting of financial controls to allow grain payments. Onur İşçi is a Russian affairs expert at Istanbul's Kadir Has University.
Understandably, Western countries are wary of giving what Putin wants immediately. The grain deal is Putin's leverage against what we could call the economic weapon against Russia.
Erdogan's close ties to Putin have strained his relations with Washington, which will complicate the Turkish leader's efforts to persuade US President Joe Biden to make concessions. Observers say Erdogan will be looking for support from UN Secretary General Guterres. Mustafa Aydın is the president of the International Relations Council of Turkey, a research institution.
We know the relationship between President Erdogan and President Biden is not excellent. Let me put it that way. And obviously Erdogan knows that he cannot convince by himself or by Turkey itself the United States to move. So he's going to try to bring in the United Nations into the picture so to kind of convince Biden to make a move towards Russia.
Erdogan's diplomatic efforts come as Ukraine starts to export grain in the face of Russian threats, raising the danger of an escalation in the Ukrainian war. Mustafa Aydın of the International Relations Council of Turkey.
Russia intentionally might try to block them and might escalate the situation. Then you don't know what it will happen. I mean, it can spill over anywhere and everywhere. It might spill over into Turkey or other Black Sea countries. And currently, of course, the conflict is contained.
For Erdogan, observers say saving the grain deal will not only avert the risk of famine and soaring food prices, but will help silence critics of his ties to Putin and reduce the danger of an escalation in the Ukrainian conflict. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Malawi has faced chronic food insecurity for years, but a 110% increase in maize prices from the previous year has made the situation even worse. Chimwe Pedanta reports from Lilongwe.
Malawi is facing natural and man-made challenges that are causing food insecurity. In February, the country was hit by Cyclone Freddy, which washed away thousands of hectares of crops in the south. The price of maize, a staple crop, has risen 110% compared to the previous year, according to an August report by the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, that has left many families scrambling to pay for essential food items, says Davison Kugu, a maize trader.
Things are not good this year. Prices of maize have gone up, and it is hard for most people to purchase. A 50 kilogram bag of maize is now selling at $43, which is an equivalent of 47,000 kwacha. This is too high for families to afford.
Kondwa Nihara of the Center for Social Concern, a social justice advocacy institution, blames the high maize prices on a lack of food security policies.
This bill was drafted by Department of Nutrition in collaboration with civil society organizations way back. But up to now, the bill hasn't been brought into Parliament to deliberate.
World Food Programme Country Representative Paul Tenbu says that Russia's invasion of Ukraine has contributed to the current food insecurity.
The war between Russia and Ukraine has hit global food security, and Malawi has not been spared. We remember that the fertilizer prices were already going up sharply in 2021, but in 2022 they doubled with the onset of the war. A large amount of the fertilizer that is traded globally comes from Russia and Ukraine.
An estimated 4.4 million Malawians are likely to face hunger in the 2023-2024 consumption period, making up 22% of the country's population. According to the August 2023 Malawi Vulnerability Assessment Committee report published by the government. Despite this, the government says it has yet to fill up the grain reserves to ease access to the staple grain for those in dire need of food assistance. Chimwe Barata, VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been a year since a young Kurdish-Iranian woman, Mahsa Amini, died in the custody of Iran's notorious morality police. She had been arrested for improperly wearing her hijab. The protests that followed, led by women and girls and joined by brothers, fathers, and sons, were the most intense and widespread anti-government demonstrations since the start of the Islamic Republic in 1979. The regime responded with a brutal crackdown. Hundreds of people were killed, tens of thousands arrested, and at least seven executed. In a statement marking the anniversary of Mahsa Amini's death, President Joe Biden said, "In the face of continued oppression and violence, the citizens of Iran remain committed to this movement and to their fight for a free and democratic future. Iranians alone will determine the fate of their country, but the United States remains committed to standing with them." Looking back over the year, President Biden pointed to the U.S.-led campaign to oust the Iranian government from the U.N. Commission on the Status of Women, the creation of a U.N. fact-finding mission to investigate the regime's human rights abuses, the assistance the U.S. has given the Iranian people to access the Internet and avoid censorship. Additionally, the U.S. has sanctioned over 70 individuals and entities for supporting the regime's oppression. On September 15th, the U.S. announced additional sanctions targeting, in President Biden's words, some of Iran's most egregious human rights abusers. The designations, announced by the U.S. Treasury Department in coordination with Britain, Canada, Australia, and other partners, target 29 individuals and entities in connection with Amini's death and the regime's continued efforts to silence dissent. The designations include leaders of Iran's security forces, the head of Iran's prison organization, two companies that assist in the regime's internet censorship, and several state-controlled media organizations. Separately, Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced the United States is taking steps to impose visa restrictions on 13 Iranian officials and other individuals for their involvement in the detention or killing of peaceful protesters or the inhibition of their rights to freedom of expression or assembly. Secretary Blinken noted that the Iranian people have been met with unspeakable violence by the Iranian regime. The United States, he declared, will continue to take appropriate actions alongside our international partners to hold accountable those who suppress Iranians' exercise of human rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.